I can hear
I can hear you.
I was getting worried there because you said you hadn't tried Skype in a while, and I was like, wow, I wonder if it's going to work.
It's been a long time.
Yeah. Well, that's good. How are you, Travis?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm on vacation this week, so it's been a
Well,
pretty quiet week.
there we go. There I am.
Have you been?
I've been all right. Things can definitely be better.
Yeah.
Considering everything, yeah, it's been rough for sure. Been out of work.
We're here to talk about your collection and your passion for comics.
That's a good thing. I'm very excited. Up here in Vermont, I don't have a lot of people to talk about, with
Yeah.
comics and stuff. Pretty spread out. I got a couple friends there that read a little bit. I give them stuff pretty much all the time to keep them interested.
Yeah.
But
Looks
yeah,
like you
it's nice.
got quite the collection there.
I do. Yeah. I guess one of my childhood dreams was to, since we didn't have a comic shop, to have my own someday. And I think I'm doing a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, a lot of collected editions, that's for sure.
Oh yeah, everything that I got is pretty much collected editions, except for I have a couple long boxes from when
Yeah.
I was a kid. I still have those, but that's about it.
Well, you're the first guest that really specializes in collected editions. Everybody else is mostly singles. Some I've had digital guests before. Speculators.
Yeah.
So you're the first one that got into this hobby and is focused on the collected editions. So can you tell me how you all got started in comics? Like, what was it, singles, or were you immediately drawn to the collected edition?
Oh no, it's definitely singles. My first comic book was when I was 4 years old, and I can still remember it. And that's why I asked the question there in the group the other day about the covers not being on, because some of the first comics I had were, they didn't have the covers on it. My father went out and got some DC for me, and I remember I couldn't read, but I could look at the pictures. And
Yeah.
I hunted down some of them that I remembered, and then I still have actually the comic from when I was like, in the 1980s. I remember I looked it up a while back there, like when it came out. I was just curious, like, because I remember very vividly of having certain Justice League of America 179 and 180. And just remember looking at the pictures, and I was always like, oh, I wonder, how old I was, because I was really young. And I looked, and it was like June of 1980, and I was
Yeah.
born in 75, so in October. So I was still 4 years old when I had my first comic.
Yeah, it was about 5 years old for me.
Yes.
So you had
And
a leg up on me there.
yeah.
But we started with coverless comics, and
Yep.
that's probably your father got them because he knew they were throwing them out.
Yep.
In
Yeah.
other words, the periodicals, what they would do is they would either rip off the entire cover, or they would rip off the upper half, and then they would send back the upper half to get reimbursed, whatever
Right.
that was. I don't know if it was 100% back or if it was like at a 70% back. And
Yep.
I guess one time my dad used took me to the garbage dump, and they were just throwing away boxes of comics, and is like, hey, here, learn to read, here you go. And you probably got them from your dad, and they're like, here's free comics, because they already got reimbursed on those
Yeah.
comics.
Probably, yeah. I had a few. I mean, they were pretty random. I remember I had two Justice League. I had like three Wonder Woman, and what else did I? I had the X-Men. I don't remember what the cover looked like, but I remember the first page because I didn't have the cover. It was Wolverine in the sewer, standing above two of the guards from the Hellfire Club.
Yeah.
I remember that one, and I had a Spider-Man one that was around the time Gwen Stacy died. I don't know if it was the issue she died in, the one before, or the one
Or the one
after, but
after.
it was
Yeah.
right around that time. Again, it was, the coverless one. I remember seeing that. So that was my first introduction in the comics.
Well, that's cool. And then how did you progress from there? Did you start sticking with the monthlies? Because at that time, that's all there was. There were no collected editions.
Actually, no. I mean, from there, it was more TV. Like I said, when I had those, like I couldn't even read. You know, it was basically like look at the pictures, and I thought they were cool. And then the movies. I remember the movies, like the first Superman being on TV, and I remember going to see the second Superman, which I think was 82 or 1980. So again, I was like 5 or 6 when that came out. And then like the superhero friends, you know, the comics, I just kind of, you know, I had them, but there wasn't something. I was more into like cartoons and the movies. And of course, being in the 80s, you know, it was like out all day long. You weren't even allowed in the house. Go play with your friends, you know, all day long when the sun came up, and don't come back until the sun goes down. Basically. You know,
Yeah,
when
how
you saw
times have
this.
changed.
Yeah, when you saw the street lights come on, like that was it. Like, okay, I need to go home now. And nobody checked on you all day long. And yeah.
That's the era I grew up in. It was a whole neighborhood, and as long as we were in by, I don't know, 10 p.m.,
Yeah, right. Exactly.
they didn't go looking for you.
No.
Yeah, it was a different time for sure.
Oh my God, yes. I mean, now, you know, I mean, you gotta know where kids are all the time, but back then they didn't even care. Like, I didn't even see a parent. You know, I was like probably 6, 7, 8, and you didn't see a parent all day long. We were like in the woods, down the streets. I
Yeah.
mean, somebody else's backyard, and we were crazy.
Yep. We'd go for long walks, that's for sure. We're
And bike
very
rides.
active too. Yeah, very active. 'Cause we didn't when I was a kid, all we had was the TV with the dial on it. You know, there
Yes.
wasn't
Oh,
even a
yeah.
remote. You just have your four
Yeah.
channels, and I wouldn't watch too much TV until like prime time with my mom and dad. You know,
Yep.
it's like more of the adventure stuff or
Yep.
Sanford and Son or whatever, you know, some comedy sitcom.
Yeah, I remember
But
Sam.
yeah, and then it was Saturday mornings, and that's where I got addicted to Super Friends.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. Super Friends, Spider-Man, his amazing friends. You know, the G.I. Joe, obviously, the He-Man was big.
Yeah. That was. I was more around the Looney Tunes, Scooby-Doo, Super Friends, Thundar the Barbarian.
Yep.
Yeah, and then when I was getting out of cartoons, I think it was around the time that a lot of kids got into cartoons like Transformers, G.I. Joe, those type of which really had really extensive toy lines.
Oh,
Like
yeah.
during that time, it was really marketable toys. They knew what they were doing, man.
Oh,
Toys
yeah.
don't sell like they used to, but you would see those, and then you'd see the commercials for the toys, and you're like, I want one of those.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. I had a lot of that. G.I.
Yeah.
Joe, and Star Wars, and Transformers, all that stuff. Good stuff back then.
One question I have for you on the collected edition side, because
Yep.
I did I never I think it's been about 10 years that I started to get into collected editions. I had this attitude that like I already have it or I already read it. I don't want the collected edition. And then later on I realized that I like the format and it's easier to pop open a book than it is to go through a long box. But how do you know what to get? Like, because a collected edition is kind of a bigger investment price-wise than if
Yeah.
you just get a single and say, okay, I like it. How do you determine what you're gonna want to get based on price?
Usually podcasts, a lot of it. You know, I hear, you know, stuff like that you say, stuff Chris and Andy. I listen to stuff like iFanboy. I think I've listened to this about every comic podcast out there. And you know, when they like you know, try to find what they like and what they don't like. And then I can kind of gauge from there. Like, if they like really like this series and not a lot of people do, and they really hate this one, I can kind of see which ones kind of line up with like my comic reading. And then, of course, they tell you about the book and what it was, and I'd be like, okay, I might be interested in something like that. And that's
Yeah.
usually how I gauge a lot of the stuff, like listening to weekly, comic podcasts. And sometimes, I can try it out on, like a digital or something. If I'm not quite sure, I'll buy, like one issue, and then lots of the trade paperbacks, with the six issues, and kind of like, okay, I'll give it a try and see if I like it or whatnot. With a lot of the like omnis and stuff, a lot of that stuff is from when I was growing up. So it's like, I love this stuff, like all the X-Men omnis that I have, Namor that, came out last year.
Yeah.
A lot of the Batman stuff, it's all a lot of my stuff that I have, or even a lot of the omnis that come out is older material. The stuff in the 80s, 70s, 80s, even the 90s that kind of I read and grew up with. So it was kind of like, I love this stuff. And like a lot of it, I remember because I read so much, like I have an idea and I can remember some of it, but when I go back and read it again, it's pretty new because it's been, 30, 40, or 30 years or so since I read it.
So would you say you navigate a lot to the I don't know, Silver Age, Bronze Age, or I guess older stuff, or do you tend to go to some of the newer stuff as well?
Oh, I go to the new stuff as well. So like I call it my continuity read, and that's a trade paperbacks, and I usually stay about a year out, and then I can see what people like and what they don't like. So they're kind of like giving me their reviews because I'm a year behind to see if I'm gonna like something or not. But I like the videos I was doing. I have a ton of trade paperbacks. Collects about six issues, and that's how I read the current stuff. Like right now, I'm currently reading March of 2019. I have all the trade paperbacks. Like, so I read about, I would say there's probably like 30 titles like a month that I read, and I have it all written down in a notebook, and I go through with like, and I read each week, and like what came out that week back a year ago, and I read that week.
That's interesting because that's how I read, but
Is it?
I read in singles.
Yeah,
So
right. That, yes.
yeah, I usually go to my basement and I dig out like 12 issues, and then I just read them. And I find out I like it better than a monthly. Like the one thing when I was reading month to month, it was a short burst, and if nothing major happened, you wouldn't necessarily remember a lot,
Right.
and then you'd get the next issue a month later, and then all that stuff that happens with all the other issues, and it has to really stand out for you to remember it. But if you take a bigger chunk and you read it from beginning to end, you see all these like little threads, and I think it adds more to your enjoyment, like as a whole.
Yep.
Even if you go to the older stuff, because they were masters of telling, I mean. They like Tom DeFalco for me. I just navigate to him because he has like four stories going on at once, and they're all in different places, and it's like a soap opera. Like you get to know the characters and all this, and I love that. And that is the experience that's gone away from our current system, I think. Like,
Absolutely.
yeah, it's more like I'm writing for this big epic story rather than give bang for your buck. I was just re listening to, I don't listen to a lot of interviews. I don't know why I don't like them. I like interviews with regular people like this.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know if I feel intimidated or what it is with a writer creator, but I listened to Tom DeFalco, and it's amazing listening to like those old writers because they knew they had to make the book pay off in order for them to get a reader to come back.
Right.
And that's what I think is missing in today's market. Yes, there's great stories, but you have to read like six of them to get the big picture.
Yeah, and they don't have the threads. This is funny you bring up Tom DeFalco because I just barely finished reading Thor, War of the Pantheon Epic Collection, which is about, I don't know, 18, 20 issues that he wrote. And like there was so many like threads in it, and each story, you know, each issue, I mean, like had another thread, or there'd just be like two panels of setting something up that's coming down the road. I mean, it was just amazing writing. It's like they don't do stuff like that. You know, Claremont was another one with the X-Men. You know, he's always had all these threads going on, and even if it was like one panel of some sinister, evil, bad guy, you know, plotting, you're like, wow, what's that guy doing? And then all of a sudden they'd be gone. And then maybe the next issue, there'd be like one more panel of them, and you're kind of like, well, what's this? And they don't write, you know, the comics like that anymore. I mean, that Thor Epic Collection I just read was, you know, unbelievable. I mean, there were so many threads going from issue to issue, and a lot of it, you know, wasn't even about what was in like the one issue. You know, one issue, I remember it was Thor versus the Hulk. And the whole thing was basically just like a battle, but they had like these little panels going on of just setting up stories that was gonna, you know, come in the future. And I just thought, you know, it's amazing writing that, you know, is definitely lost now.
Yeah.
I don't see that anymore.
Him and Ron Frenz,
Yes.
I just love their style. I love his art and I love his storytelling. Yeah, they were a pair. I mean, they teamed up a lot on Thor, Spider-Man. He had a Paul Ryan on Fantastic Four. But he's just a solid writer, and I guess I never appreciated him as much until I got old.
Right. You know, a lot of the
Because
Bronze
I,
Age,
yeah.
you know, guys were like that. You know, I go back now, you know, I read them as a kid, but like I said, I kind of remember, but I kind of don't. And like, I pick up so many different Bronze Age titles, you know, off the collection and read it. And it's like, wow, you know, I mean, they all seem to be on that page with the threads. And like you said, they had to get the book to sell. And you could just tell they were giving everything they had, and they were putting these threads in to basically get you to come back, you know, and buy the next issue. Like, well, what was that evil guy doing? I need to pick up the next issue. And
Yeah.
they also, the thing I found in that, like that Thor Epic that I just read, it was like they told a story within one issue from beginning to end, and they gave you like a good story. Like, if you that was the only comic book you picked up, you got a story, but it also had like, oh, maybe there's a little bit more that I want to, you know, read. And I think that's gone, you know, as well. You
Those
know.
Epic collections are my favorite, and I never wanted to get into them. It was a co-host of mine on the Retrocast that got me to try one, and it was the Thor that you're talking about, by the way. And I was like, I don't understand why they are putting out books non-sequential. Like, my mind just couldn't understand that it started on volume 7, or you know what I mean?
Right,
The Epic
yes.
collections are just seem like a random
Yeah.
collection of stories. But what I realized is they're usually grouped very logically and they usually have a theme.
Yeah.
And I was like, once I got addicted to that one, I read one other and then I was like, okay, I need to be picking these up. And I realized I wanted all of them. So it's like it's the first line of trade paperbacks that I decided I want to be in all in. I've never been all in on a line before on collected editions. How about yourself? Which is your favorite format? I mean, there's lots of different ones.
Probably the Omnis. And that's the completest. You know, like I mentioned in one of the videos, I think if you enjoy Omnis, there's this really underlining of being like a completist. Like, I want to own every issue of every character that I like. You know, I want the whole thing. And you know, when I get the Omni, I get such a large chunk of it at one time. And plus, the books are beautiful. They're oversized, nice hardcover. You know, there's usually a lot of extras in it. It's very well laid out, you know, at the beginning with table of contents like they do in the Epic, and just the whole package is just, I just really enjoy the Omnis. I like the Absolutes too. You know, you get a lot in there, and that's even bigger. You know, I love that oversized. You know, it just kind of engulfs me more with like the story when I'm looking at it.
How about what do you think of the size? Like, how do you read those things? Like,
Usually,
they're pretty big and they weigh
yeah.
a lot.
So usually I have a recliner, and usually what I'll do is I'll sit in my recliner and I'll put a pillow on my lap, and then I'll just set the book on my lap.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for me, I mean, again, everybody's a little bit different. You know, I've heard that, you know, people mention the same thing. You know, it's big, it's hard to read, I don't know how to sit right. You know, I know some people, I'm in a couple omnibus collectors groups, and they actually have like book trays, you know, where they sit and they kind of place the omni on like this tray kind of thing there, and they read it that way. I mean, to me, I'm just as comfortable in my, you know, my lazy boy recliner chair with a pillow on my lap and the book on top of it, and that works great for me.
Yeah, that's kind of how I read them, at least most of the time. Sometimes I lay on my belly and just put it on the floor and read it.
Yeah.
But it just depends on how comfortable I am.
Ex
But
exactly.
I like, I've only plowed through like two omnis before, and there's a huge sense of accomplishment once you've gone through one. It's like you
There is.
feel, because it's just so big, it's so thick, and you think, wow, I did it last year with Venom, because you know how they have that adopt a character?
Yep.
Like I really like that idea, because it gets you to learn something that you might not have known before.
Right. Oh yeah,
Yeah.
definitely. Especially if you're reading a lot of it. You know, that was, you know, interesting point when Doctor Strange, I did that as Doctor character 1 year, and I got the Ditko omnibus, and I started like I wanted to start at the beginning. I was like, you
Yeah.
know, a lot of characters, you know, a lot of people, they, you know, you jump in somewheres and then you just kind of go and you never go back and read stuff in the silver or the golden age if they had some. So I wanted to start at the beginning with this, and I read the Ditko, and the first couple issues I was like, yeah, boy, this is, you know, not quite what I like. And by the time I got done that Ditko omnibus, I was like in love with the characters, you know, like
Yeah.
I experienced, you know, everything. And then when I read, you know, onto the next, like I think it was Jerry Conway, I think, wrote it in the 70s. And then like when a character would show up, like I would know the whole history, like Nightmare, for instance,
Yeah.
Doctor Strange, you know, like, and I'd be like, oh, I remember, you know, whatever, Strange Tales, whatever, when Nightmare made his first appearance. And like I had all the content of
Yeah.
that, you know, villain, which was really cool to me.
It adds to the experience, that's for
Yeah.
sure.
Absolutely, you know, every time Mordor would show up, or Dramanu, or you know, would come, you know, I would know like the whole history in the book,
Yeah.
starting at those, you know, the first appearance and going down through. So that's why I really, you know, collected some of the Silver Age and tried to get back, you know, before I was even reading in comics, you know, in the 80s. Like my last, or the omnibus I read last was the Green Lantern volume, I think volume one of the Silver Age, the Hal Jordan stuff. And again, I had never read, you know, very little Green Lantern, and I wanted to start, you know, right at the beginning. And that was definitely a book, like it was so like overwritten, and it's such a big omni that like I got done that, I was like, well, okay, that was a that was a
Yeah.
big, you know, it was a lot of words to get through.
Yeah,
But it was nice just to
it's a
start
big
at the beginning.
investment, but it has huge payoff. Yeah, I like to do that. The only thing that distracts me is I'm a mood reader, so I switch. Like I and what I have trouble with is like some of those little editor's notes, or there's some character that they introduce and it leads me down another tangent. Like I was like, I want to know more about that, because that's the kid in me. Because when I would read these comics and I would see a villain and they would have like an editor's note and say, oh, he was last over here in this in Strange Tales 114, then you're like, where's that? Like, I
Yes.
want to know where that exists.
And that, you know, and that was the fun, I feel too. Like they don't do that a lot in the modern comics, or at least not in the collected editions. They may do it off the rack. But like that was a lot of the fun, you know, in the 80s and stuff when you saw that, like go see Amazing Spider-Man, whatever, and I'd be like, oh, I don't have that one. And then almost like hunting and trying to find that issue so I could, you know, see whatever was happening in it.
Yeah, it's like going from one rabbit hole to another, because
Yeah.
they would lead you down this way, and then you're like, well, how do I find that? And it, at least when I was a kid, it was a lot harder to find. Like
Oh, wow.
now I can see an editor's note, and I can either go to the basement, find the issue, I could look on the wall for my collected edition if I have it, Or I can open up Marvel Unlimited or the DC app and say, do they have it here? And
It's all.
it's usually the later because I get like a curious thing. Like, I was recently on Gotham by Geeks, and I have trouble with those podcasts because I love Batman, but I have to be in the mood for Batman. And usually when I'm on that show, I tend to veer off of Batman, but I keep it Batman related. And I usually start in a weird place. Like they'll say, we're doing the Riddler. And I'm like, huh, what could I do with the Riddler? And then I think outside the box and I'm like, oh, I want to read Atari Force, you know, with Garcia Lopez. Is there any Batman that Garcia Lopez drew? And then I'll go down that path and say, okay, I'm going to go to Garcia Lopez and do that. And that's how I usually do those theme podcasts.
I think that's why I, like the collected editions, like, my continuity read, the current stuff is like I read, like I said, I have about 20 or 30 titles that I read. And then like I do like the week, whatever came out in that week, and I'll read it out of the collected edition. And then once I get that done, which usually takes me like a day or two, and then I call my like my free read, and that's when I read the Thor epic. So I read like a whole bunch of, different titles and characters all week long.
Yeah.
Unless I'm, on my free reads, I'm really now trying to focus and like, go through certain runs. Like currently I'm reading Crimson. I'm trying to work my way through the whole Crimson Omnibus or Absolute
Is that the
Edition.
vampire?
Yes, by
Yeah, okay, yeah.
which is great, by the
I didn't
way.
know they had a collected edition for that.
Oh yeah, it's that's absolute form. It's all 24 issues, and then there was I think a Scarlet one-off that's in there as well.
Yeah, I have the singles. I just never knew it went to collected. That's interesting.
I think everything's collected. There's not a lot of stuff like if
Who?
you look.
So DC put that out?
Boom Studios
Oh,
did.
Boom did. Okay.
Yeah,
'Cause
not DC. Not
I thought it
DC.
used to be a cliffhanger, I think. Image cliffhanger. So, and I was like, "Well, who the heck would put out that?" And then I thought it was Cliffhanger Wildstorm. That's how I got the link there. But I guess it wasn't.
I
Wow,
think
Boom put, what's the size on that? What are the dimensions?
it's like a library edition.
Oh, okay.
Let me hold on. Yeah, it was Boom Studio. Can you see me?
Yeah, I can.
So this is the
Oh my God,
slip
that is a
case.
beast.
Yeah, it's a
Yeah.
library
When you
edition.
said absolute, that's why I went saw it, but it's the absolute size. That's
Yes,
about
the
the
absolute.
size of the DC absolutes. That is a nice one.
Yeah, well, I was very surprised. It's actually signed. They have like a paper inside where it's like a real autograph there.
A came signed, like a you bought the signed edition.
Yeah, it was the only one. So, I get a little foolish in this stuff, and I
Yeah.
really wanted to read it. And of course, I like all the collected editions. So, I think it was on In Stock Trades, and there was like only one left. And of course, it was the limited edition signed one, which was more expensive than the regular one. And I was like, okay, I'll get that one. So I paid a
Yeah.
little bit more for it, but hey, why not? It's a great,
And
beautiful.
for our listeners here, they're not going to see the video, but I'm seeing Travis in the background. He's got like his Marvel omnibuses going, it looks like alphabetically from A
Oh yeah,
across
you
all the
bet.
way down to, and then D's the second row.
Yeah,
It's a really pretty display. And then on the top, he's got several statues and what are those statues? Those aren't Bowen, are they? I know the US agent, it looks like a Bowen.
yes, U.S. agents of Bowen. Some of them is side or I was it Iron Studios is the
Okay.
Punisher up there. And then a lot of them is what is it called? A gallery.
Oh, the
It's like,
gallery editions,
yeah, the gallery.
yeah.
Yeah, I really like those. They're very affordable And you know, I think they're beautiful. You know, for the price and the affordability to like just dress up my shelves and my collection. I mean, I hands down, you know, it's probably the best investment for the money. I mean, you can get those for I think around $30 to like $50.
Yeah, I see them in the previews a lot, and I'm like, I like them a lot. I'm a Bowen statue guy, and that's what got me in. My first Bowen statue was Doctor Strange, believe it or not. It was the Bowen bust, and it's when he converted. You see how your U.S. agent is like cut V, like it's when he started to do the bust from waist up, because he was doing like those V-shaped busts. And then he did from the waist up. And the first two Bowens I got was Doctor Strange, because my team is the Defenders. Like, I love the Defenders. I don't know why it is. They're such an oddball group. They don't even belong together. But I wanted Doctor Strange. And then they came out with Luke Cage, who also was in some of the Defenders I read as a kid. And he had the chain belt. And then I was like, I gotta buy all of the busts. And then they stopped making them, but I was on really late, so I didn't get a lot of I don't think I have that US agent, and I wanted to get into that because there's a lot of questions on the Slack or on forums or any kind of thing about the evolution of characters. And you know, some of us can say, well, my Flash is Wally West, or you know, you can pick different flashes. Some people might say Jay Garrick, or but you have on your wall, you have a cap on a motorcycle, and then you also have a US agent. So where did that come from? Like your passion for US agent.
Oh, so th this so actually you when we first started talking, you mentioned, you know, how I got into comics. You know, and so, you know, the covers ripped off, and I was, you know, I was young, and then, you know, movies and whatnot, and I didn't read comics. And then in Scott it had to been 1986, 87. Long story short, my father was ill when I was growing up, and I used to have to stay at different relatives' house, different friends' house, whatnot. And when I did, I'd always have, you know, my parents before they left, you know, stay in the hospital and stuff, they would leave like a comic book. And I still have some of those, Captain America and whatnot. Again, I was still pretty young. And I remember, I think it was in 88, 87, I was staying at a friend's house. And you know, the mother, my friend's mother, took us down to like the drugstore and picked up a comic book. And you know, I was like 12 years old, and you know, growing up in the 80s, and I was kind of like, you know, that stigma where comics are for little kids. And I picked up the Captain America. I was like, you know, I was just kind of like, you know, down, whatnot, you know, okay, I'll get a book. What else are we gonna do here? You know, I'll read or whatever. So I get a Captain America. I remember it was a summer day. I get back to his house. I think we're eating lunch. I started reading it, and it was Johnny Walker. And he was in the Captain America. And I mean, it was like the most violent Captain America that I had ever read, you know. And as a 12-year-old boy, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, you know, Johnny Walker's taking the shield, and he's like smashing all these troops, and they're gonna hang him, and he's killing people. And I'm like, this stuff is amazing, you know. And because before that, you know, my mind was like the Batman 66 show, or you know, even Amazing Spider-Man. It's like, or the Spider-Man and Friends or Justice League, you know, cartoon. You know, it was good, but it was kind of like, you know, the stories were pretty, you know, cut and dry or whatnot. I never thought there was any depth to it. And when I read that, my mind was like blown, and I was hooked from that moment. So, like for a while, like that was like my real introduction in the comics, like about 86, 87, when I read that first one. So, you know, and I always knew the Captain America character, but I never really knew like Steve Rogers, you know. You know, young, you know, Captain America, Captain America. I don't know the real name, I don't care. So I thought Johnny Walker was the real Captain America. So I'm, you know, I'm getting into it, and Johnny Walker, and like this guy's like, he, well, I didn't think he was like this. This guy's, you know, great. And then all of a sudden, the Steve Rogers starts coming back in, right? And I'm like, who's this Steve Rogers guy trying to take over Captain America?
Yeah.
He actually got it back, and I was, like, so upset. I was like, that's not right. You know, it's kind of like people today, you know, when Jane Foster became Thor and they're upset. Yeah. I was upset when Steve Rogers came back in because Johnny Walker was, you know, my Captain America, and that's all I knew.
that's funny. But it goes to show that what might not be for someone when they change something could attract somebody else. Like it could be somebody else's gold because that's what they know. Mm-hmm. And that's a perfect example. I grew up with the Barry Allen Flash, cuz Flash is my favorite. But the one thing that I think got me a cut over to Wally more so is because the DC old heroes, they didn't have a lot of personality or personal problems. Like, yes, he was going to miss a date with Iris or whatever, but it seems like when they cut over in the 80s and 90s, it was more after Crisis, they were more Marvelized. In other words, Kyle Rayner was more grounded. You know, he gets up, he goes outside of a bar and to take a leak or whatever, and then he's like Green Lantern, you know. He gets the lantern ring.
Yeah.
But he was an artist, a struggling artist, and then you have, you know, Wally, who was rich at the time. I mean, he had a lot of money, but he was really grounded. And he had a lot of all kinds of other problems, and they would focus on those problems. So I tended to like that, you know, like it added more, because one thing I like about superheroes is when their alter egos are just as interesting as the main character's action, you know, like when they're fighting. I like the alter ego their personal problems and all the soap opera stuff with their lives, and I like that stuff.
Yeah, it's just good storytelling, you know, given it, you know, like you said, you got two different characters instead of one. You have Barry Allen character and you got the Flash character, you know, kind of like with Batman and Bruce Wayne and, you know, a lot of those.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. And one thing I appreciate, like when I ask people onto the show here, is they all have interesting stories, but they understand comics like the way, like, I've never met you before, but I kind of can gauge, like, even though we've never talked, and you say, like, you can gauge people by listening to them on podcasts and stuff. I can kind of gauge people just by, like, what you post on the Slack channel and stuff like that. And I knew you were, you had that thing where you would remember stuff. Like, people that really understand comics, they like remember where they were, when that character got, what time it was, what was going on in their lives. Like you said, you know, what was going on in your life, and you had that, like you knew exactly what was happening. And that's why I think comics are so special to us, especially early on when they were like crafting us, is because you remember those details of just what was going on, the rack that you picked it off, the smells that were in the air. I mean, they have this magic about them.
Yeah, it's like a timestamp in life.
It's a timestamp.
You know, even the coverless ones. I remember being like 7 o'clock at night. My father worked third shift, so he would be sleeping. And, you know, again, I was 4 or 5 years old, and I remember laying on the bed and looking at, you know, the pictures, basically, because I couldn't read very well.
Yeah.
I remember I used to read the advertisements, because I could get through an advertisement for like Spalding. I mean, Dr. J was in those, and I think OJ. You know, I could read the advertisement, but the story was above my head for 4 years old, for sure.
Yeah, I remember that Dr. J ad pretty.
Him and Rick Perry.
When I was a kid growing up, I was big into basketball, because you say, like, in your neighborhoods, you would do stuff. Well, basketball was our neighborhood thing. We'd play basketball all the time. And one of our first computers was a Commodore 64. Yeah. And it was just a huge floppy drive. just this huge floppy drive, and it had like a cassette injector into the keyboard. And one of
Yep.
the floppy drives I had was Dr. J. Larry Bird.
I was
And
gonna. I knew. When you started with the story, I was like, I know where he's going with this. Yeah, I
I
played that one as well.
played that game like over and over and
Oh,
over
yeah.
again. Like, yeah, I had so much fun with that game. But
Yeah.
it also goes with the ads that you'd see in the comic books. I kind of miss the ads because the ads used to have a lot of personality. I used to like to read, like, Ask the Answer Man and all those little different things that they would have, Stanley's editorial or whatever that stuff. And that's what the omnibuses have. A lot of them have that stuff, whereas the
Yep.
Epic would not. So that's the benefit of the omnibus. You get a little timestamp. You don't get the ads, but you get the letters pages.
Right. I think comics as a whole is such a timestamp, you know, when stuff came out, you know, what the politics were like, what the world atmosphere was like, you know, where people were at in their lives. I mean, comics are great. They've been, you know, since the 40s. You know, and with the Captain America and the World War II stories, and just all the way through to the 70s with like drugs, like, you know, hard traveling heroes, like all the stuff that was going on, you know, in the world put into comic books. And you go back, and it's almost like a history lesson. Like, this is the way the world was in 1974, and, you know, the protests, like in a lot of those books and stuff.
Exactly. Like you learn about like poverty and all this stuff in different areas. Like the Defenders would deal with that a lot. They'd go to like an impoverished area and they're like, there's this child and there's rats running around the floor, and you're like, what the hell's going on? And one of the things that a lot of people get, they don't realize, is the atmosphere politically and what's going on in the world has always been part of the comics. Whether
Yep.
you go back to the old Golden Age, like you could flip open a Golden Age Superman, like that's the archives that they come up with are kind of like the Marvel's equivalent to the Omnibus. But those Silver Age, Bronze Age books, those thick ones that they come out with, you can read those and find the political atmosphere of that time period.
Yep.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Or even, you know, even besides just like what things were like back in that time. You know, like I mentioned earlier, I read the Green Lantern Silver Age Omnibus One. You know, and back then, I mean, phones were, you know, there was no TVs. Like, there was not a TV drawn, or nobody's watched TV, and like the phone was like used every once in a while, you know, just the way they lived, you know, when these stories were being written. It was just like, oh,
Yeah, now
very
everybody has a
interesting.
cell phone.
You know, yeah, well, you know, and now you see the current comics. Yeah, right. Everybody has a cell phone because that's where we're at. But, you know, you go back even the 80s stuff. You read that 80s, there's no cell phones, you know, there's pay phones, and they're using that. I mean, Superman, remember, he used to change in the pay phone.
Yeah, he
That's
did.
lost. You ask somebody that, oh, I don't remember anything like that. And that was such a huge part of Superman, was the whole phone booth, you know, going to the phone booth and then like flying away. Was it Superman 1 or 2 movie where it was like that half phone booth kind of was being invented, and he came went in there and he was like, what's this? And he had to go
Christopher
across the
Reeve
street to
looks
the
at
other
it.
one.
Yeah. I can't remember if that was in 3 or 4. I can't
I
remember
think it
which
was
one
later.
that was. That's why a lot of people hate Superman 3, but I sort of love that movie because it's almost like reading a Kerry Bates Superman. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
It's like those issues back then with action and Superman, they were like whole stories and they were so weird, but you got a whole story in that book.
Yep.
And that's
Superman.
why Superman 3 was like that. It was
Yep.
just goofy. It was like a Kerry Bates Superman. And I
And
was like, that's why I love that movie. It's funny.
then it went a little dark there. I remember that was the one with Richard Pryor, right? Yeah, and when he was in that machine and it was kind of like peeling his skin and stuff, and it was kind of like, whoa.
It actually did. They built that has a funny scene in it too, because they almost have like Atari graphics in
Yeah.
one of them. Like the special effects degraded on 3 and 4, but they had like the sounds of the Atari. Because when I was a kid, we got Atari like way late, but when we did, we had that Superman game. There was a Superman DC game, and I played the heck out of that game. That was one game that I really liked. Didn't have a lot of cartridges, but I did have that Superman game and some Spider-Man game as well, where you'd have to like save people in these little square buildings. They weren't as nearly sophisticated as the games we have today, which
Sure.
I can't play. They're too complicated.
That was one of the things, with games back then too. Like I remember, my son would ask, he grew up with Atari and like Pac-Man was fun, but like Pac-Man got old like in an hour, where today's games, at least to me, today's games,
Yeah.
like they'd suck you in for, you could play them for, days. I mean, the graphics looks
Yeah.
like a movie.
Yeah.
Back then, it was nice and simple. You play Pac-Man, yeah, this is fun. 45 minutes, an hour, and you'd be like, okay, I'm done with this. Let's go outside and play.
Yeah. So you also have, it looks like that top shelf on the left, well, it's probably on your right, is Epic Collections. Is that Marvel Epic? Okay.
That's the Marvel, my Marvel Epic Collections and the trade paperbacks of all the stuff that, I currently read.
Yeah. What's
And then,
the two shelves down?
that is down at the bottom is the Image stuff and Dark Horse, IDW,
Oh, okay.
a lot of the John Sable down there, Nexus,
That third shelf
Firefly.
there that has that looks like white, that's mostly white binding. What is that?
That's
Is that
the
the
Marvel.
image?
No, that's the Marvel Now stuff. So that's all the Marvel trade paperbacks, like about 6 issues in
Oh,
it. Marvel
okay.
Now, and actually
That's what
right
they
up.
look like, huh? I don't have any of those.
Yep,
Huh.
that's the.
Oh, yeah.
So like the Punisher, and that's just the white binding
Yeah,
and
yeah.
6 issues. Yep.
Oh, cool.
That's how I read. That's how I read my singles. And
Yeah, that's a good way to, I guess,
it's,
spend your money right too. Like,
well,
I'm
that's,
sure you get some duds though. Like, I'm sure you listen to somebody and say, "Oh man, they really like that." And then you get one and you're like, "That didn't really work for me."
yeah, oh, absolutely. But like you said, with the money wise, I mean, so I do a lot of my stuff on in stock trades, and like for 6 issues, the cover price is about $16, and then you go to in stock trades and it's like 50 to 42% off. So I'm paying like $9 for 6 issues,
Yeah.
compared to if I was going to the shop, where I, what is it, like $2.99, $3.99 a book,
Yeah. Yeah.
so that was definitely financially, that was kind of, I was like,
A
okay,
better
I'll do,
way. Are
yeah.
there any if would you say you're more of a Marvel guy than a DC, or are you pretty divided
I
equally?
was Marvel as a kid. And then, so when I got into collected editions, like again, like I said, I read so much Marvel as a kid. And I didn't, the only thing I read as DC as a kid was Batman. And I think that was just about it. Batman, maybe some Suicide Squad here and there. So when I got back into it, I wanted to go back and I wanted to read, the DC side of stuff. So I read, I've read a lot of the DC stuff in the collected editions from stuff when I was a kid that I just didn't read. But like currently, I would say I'm more DC, but I go back and forth because I feel like when I first got back in the collected editions, I was DC. It was a background time when the New 52 first launches, when I really kind of started just jumping down all the rabbit holes. Like
Yeah.
the line came out, and that's what DC wanted, right? They wanted to get, new people, or maybe somebody like me who grew up with comics, kind of, life happens and
Yeah.
financially can't afford it. And now I'm coming back into it, and I'm like, okay, I'll read, one or two. And then, of course, like you said, then I get into it and like check this one. I was like, okay, this issue came out. Let me get that trade paperback. So I just started reading, a bunch of DC from the New 52. And then like halfway through, a lot of the titles started kind of, they weren't really working for me. And then some of the Marvel stuff was. And then when the Marvel stuff, when they had that couple years there where they like change all the characters, like
Yeah.
Tony Stark's gone. Steve Rogers is an old guy. Thor's gone. You know, and those are just the characters I grew up with. You know, and so like when those characters are gone for me, it was kind of like it might be somebody else is like loving it, but for me, I was like, I like my old characters. So I was like, oh, DC, I still got my Bruce Wayne, my Clark Kent. Like, I know these guys. These are guys I grew up with. So I gravitated back
Might be
towards.
somebody else's U.S. agent. You gotta remember
Exactly. Hell yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. You know,
that.
it's like, well, this not kind of working for me. But now I'll say, though, I've been, you know, reading the Rebirth stuff, and I'm about, you know, like I said, I'm reading March of 2019, and I'm finding that the Marvel titles now are more interesting, like the Conan. I really enjoy that one. The Daredevil, I'm enjoying that one tremendously. There's just more Marvel stuff that I'm enjoying with DC. I'm actually cutting stuff back on the DC side. You know, like I'm reading Red Hood and the Outlaws, the Titans. Stop reading that one. There's a few that I just kind of like, you know, like I said, I have 30, so I'm like, okay, let's cut back some of these that they're just not, you know, doing it for me. They're still decent reads, you know, but I'm kind of like, I want to read though, but having so many collected editions and stuff, it's like I want to read some of the older stuff, you know, and if I'm continuously just reading 30, you know, trade paperbacks, you know, like I never have time, there's only so much I can read, you know, per day, so I don't get to go back and read the other stuff. So this year, I'm trying to focus more on, you know, cutting back, you know, some of the more current titles and focusing in on some of the older stuff that I just love. Every time, like that Thor, I didn't read Thor as a kid, but reading that Epic Collection, I was like, this stuff is amazing. I love, you know, just love the whole thing. I wasn't even a Thor fan going through it. But it's just that
I
style of
think you,
writing.
yeah, it, he. If you go into his stuff, like his Fantastic Four, and he did Spider Girl, which is pretty freaking amazing. When Marvel was doing the M2 universe, that run with Franz was phenomenal. He's really good. Like I don't think you can go wrong picking up a collection edition from him. Like when he came to Fantastic Four was like one of the lowest sellers. And then he knew what he had to do, and he even said, I had to build that soap opera feel again, and I wanted to get people to draw back in. And by the time he left, it was like in the top four of Marvel sellers. So, you know, he knew what he had to do and how long it would probably take him to get people back over to it. 'Cause Fantastic Four, it seems like they had a better run early on. Like they struggle, I think, as being a family, like trying to get in current readers. I don't know why that is, but 'cause that makes them unique, you know, that they're so tightly knit and they're like one unit. Whereas like Avengers, you can change the lineup all the time. Fantastic Four usually don't have a change unless Johnny dies, or you'll have, you know, a Crystal come in for a while, or Sue's off having a baby, so Medusa's there, or you know, something like that.
And I'm reading the who's writing it? The Fantastic Four. Is that Dan Slott is writing it now,
Yeah,
or
he's writing it now. Yeah.
you know, and like you know, like some of the like the modern comics, it just you know, I'm maybe it's just because I grew up in the 80s, like it always feels like there's not a lot of character time. It just feels like it's one big, you know, battle. Here's the bad guy, here's this, and they never spend time like the soap opera feel like that you're talking about, like the character and learning like what Reed Richards likes or doesn't like or what, you know, they just seems like it's always off to another, you know, big adventure. And like, and especially in Marvel, it always seems like it's some, you know, huge on DC now too, you know, just some huge thing's going to destroy the universe. And it's just like bounces from one event to the other.
Yeah, that's why you got to juggle it. You got to juggle it to make it fresh again. That's why I kind of like change. I like when they change stuff, but I like it to be an evolution of change. Like, I like it to be more smooth than abrupt. Yeah. So, do you have all of the omnibi of Marvel, or do you stick to certain characters?
I like to say I stick to certain characters, but I would say I have, there's not a lot that I don't have. for both sides, DC and the Marvel omnibus. Like, I try to stick to things I'm interested in, but I'm pretty much interested in everything. So, there's not a lot of stuff like I hate. One thing that I don't have for Marvel is like Deadpool. I read some Deadpool, and I'm like, I do not like this. So I don't have any Deadpool omnis.
It's acquired taste.
I couldn't do it.
I was the same way until recently. I started reading Keith Giffen's Ambush Bug, and it was a character I hate absolutely hated when he came out, and started rereading it. And I grow an appreciation for it, and that's kind of like Deadpool, because he'll talk to the audience and sort of make fun of the medium.
And and a lot of people love it. It's just I don't know. I guess to me personally, I think I take comics and I like the serious approach. I like fun, as well, of course, for comics, but I don't know. It just kind of crossed a little bit too far. I remember the first Deadpool movie I went to, and I was like, at first, like the beginning, I was like, I don't like this. And I get halfway through it though, and I'm like, oh my God, it's just so, ridiculous that it's becoming funny. And by the time I got to the end of the movie, I was like, oh, that was really good.
That's I think when the first time I liked Deadpool was watching the movie. I think I had the same experience because I just never I kind of would like him in a di like a more serious manner, like in what was it, a Uncanny X Factor or X
X4.
Force? Yeah, when Remender was writing it, and that's when I sort of liked him because he could bounce off of the other characters and he wouldn't be too ridiculous.
I did like the second movie, after the first one. My wife was the same way. We're both, like, oh God, this is awful. And then we're looking, we started, I think it was a Zamboni scene in the first movie when the guy's prowling. And like, it was so stupid at the time. Like, we just started laughing. And then by the end of it, we're like, that was really good. But like, the first like half an hour of the movie, we're kind of like, oh, come on. But then we went to the second one and we loved it. It was almost like we knew what to expect. And I guess maybe I was a little, I knew he was goofy and broke the third wall, but I guess that was my, it was a little too much. But going into the second one, I knew what to expect with Deadpool, and we both really enjoyed the movie.
Well,
But
let's talk about some of the creators that you really like over the years. Can you give me a handful?
Mike Grell.
He's amazing. Have you got to meet him?
I have not, one of the things, I have never been to a Comic Con living in. I've been to the Vermont Comic Con, but I can't really count that.
The hotel, it's more like a hotel con.
It was at a hotel, yes, and it was very small, and it was, you could barely find a comic on the floor. It was just very odd. A lot of people were dressed up, a lot of cosplaying. And that was about it. They had rooms for like playing games, like board games and stuff. But the comedy, like there was no creators, there was no artists. It was that's my only experience. So I have not met anyone. And this year.
One thing I will tell you about him is he's got stories. Like, he's a creator that can tell you these oddball stories. Like, I went to a panel with him in Denver Comic Con, and he was talking about them optioning off John Sable, and
Oh
the
man.
guy who wanted to be John Sable, like, he was hooked on it, was Gene Simmons.
Oh
And
no. Wow,
like,
I didn't
he
know
was like, I don't want Gene Simmons to play this guy.
that.
But Gene
That's
Simmons
awesome.
liked the comic book. Like, he loved the comic book because John Sable is like one of, I don't know, him, the Warlord, and John Sable, I think, are my favorite Mike Grell properties.
Love John Sable. John Sable, and I got to go with the Green Arrow. I mean, that's
That is phenomenal too.
yeah, the Green Arrow. He Mike Grell. He's probably my favorite creator. And some of the other ones, they've Jeff Johns always writes good stuff. It's really hard pressed to find like a Jeff Johns book that was like, oh, that sucked. Like Jeff Johns always writes, even if it's not the most amazing thing, it's
It's
like
still really good.
it's still really good, exactly. It's kind of the same way I feel like with Brian K. Vaughan's another one. Some of the stuff's amazing, but there's never nothing that's like, that wasn't that good. Jeff Lemire, really like Jeff Lemire stuff. I'm blanking on the criminal guy, Brubaker.
Brubaker.
Love his stuff. God, there's so many of them. And in the 80s, guys, like the Jerry Conway, the Marv Wolfman is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
John Byrne, I love
Yeah.
a lot of his stuff. Lynn Wein, I was just
You're
talking.
naming a lot of my favorites, that's for sure.
I was just talking about Lynn Wein. We were actually having a discussion about the Swamp Thing with Lynn Wein and Alan Moore, and I was telling like how I enjoy the Lynn Wein stuff better than the Alan Moore Swamp Thing. Unpopular take, but
Yeah. Hey, to each his own. I mean,
I read both of them, and Lynn Wein, I thought this was great.
he's a good writer, Len Wein.
Yeah.
I don't know if you checked out his Blue Beetle. That's pretty amazing.
I have not actually.
Yeah, they didn't collect it. They did. They collected it as a showcase, black and white. But that's the way you can get Len Wein Blue Beetle, if you can find it. It was towards the end of the showcases where they were almost like phasing out the line.
Yep.
Yeah, that's really good. I really like Len Wein.
And the Captain America, Mark Greenbaum, right? It's like,
Yeah.
Greenbaum, who's writing, the
Mark
U.S. agent,
Grenwald. Yeah.
Grenwald, who
Oh,
was writing.
he's another Tom DeFalco. Oh my God, he's got like five or six things going on in his storylines.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my goodness. And then the
With the,
Squadron Supreme, he
yep.
wrote that too.
And you don't ever hear his name. The Captain America stuff that I grew up with. Because that was my introduction to comics. So to me, that's like the Holy Grail. But I thought. You don't hear his name. Those stories were amazing. At least I thought so.
He actually got me to like a space character too, because I never really could get into the Marvel space until I started reading his Quasar.
Oh,
And
yes.
yeah.
Yes, that
I was
was,
like,
you know, that's funny. The Quasar, that was another one of my favorites, as a kid was, and that was because like the number one issues came out. I don't know if you had this or not, but like when I was growing up, you had your Hulk and everything with like number 398, 400. But when a number one came around, it was almost like my way of being like, okay, this is my character. I'm starting at number one. Like the Wolverine, number one, Punisher, Quasar. Who else was some of, I think Guardians of the Galaxy might have had number one, and that was
Yeah, that
my way
was
of being like,
the Jim Valentino
yep,
Guardians of the
yes.
Galaxy. Yeah.
Excalibur was another one, the number one. I was like, oh, this is gonna be my X-Men. Like, I'm here from the beginning of it.
Yeah, that was why I love Valiant so much. That was like if I got in on Marvel in the 60s, like when it
Yes,
first
right.
started. And I went to the store. I was in college when Valiant came out, and I picked up just a random issue of Archer and Armstrong, and I was like, "What is this?" Like I was blown away because of some of the themes they had in it, and just the nature of a drunk guy that's immortal, hanging out with this religious guy that was grew up in this religious cult. And I was just like, "What is this?" And it was at the time of Unity. And Unity was like their big event. And then I started picking it all up. Like, I was like, I gotta get everything Valiant. But then at that time, Wizard was saying, oh, this is hot, this is hot, this is hot. So getting back issues was a real pain in the butt because, some of those early issues were like $100 each. But I slowly worked my way and got them all. And that's why, of all the universes, that's like one universe that I don't think I could quit. Because I feel like I've been there.
Valiant, yeah.
Yeah.
Valiant is good stuff. I recently, I don't know when, I got a lot of the X-O Man of War,
Yeah.
Harbinger,
Did you
Bloodshot.
read the Jeff Lemire Bloodshot?
I did not. I
Oh,
read
you'd like that.
the one before it. I really liked. I
His
remember.
Bloodshot to me is is the best, and
That's
I don't know why it is, but it's more like psychological. Like it, I don't know. He writes it really well, though.
the Bloodshot Reborn, right?
Yeah.
Yes. I actually picked up the deluxe.
Yeah.
I think the first volume, because the second volume you cannot get anymore. It's completely out of print, going for a ridiculous price, so I had to get the trade paperback. But I do have it.
Yeah,
Again,
that's cool.
on the list to read. I got a big back pile to read.
Yeah, I love that stuff. The John Sable, who was the publisher on those reprints?
So the reprints is IDW.
Oh,
Did
okay.
they did some of them, and then Comic Mix.
Yeah, that's who I thought did it. Comic Mix.
Because I actually have the there's three digest side omnis, and the
Yeah.
first two I have are IDW, and the third one I have is Comic Mix. And what's funny, I wanted to get like either the Comic Mix or the IDW, and I ordered John Sable the Comic Mix volume one, and I got the book, and half of it was John Sable, and the other half was a cooking book printed in.
What?
Yeah, and I sent it back to you. And of course, it said Comic Mix, so I'm like, I was kind of confused. Like, so is this the mix they're talking about? Like, and it was this. I guess it was just a massive. They must have printed. I don't know how it happened, but I had John Sable for half the book and a cooking book printed for the other half of it.
Wow, I would
And
have
I
kept
see
it. That's a collector's item right
it
there.
probably was, and I was so upset. And I thought, just because, like I said, the comic mix. So I thought, like, is this their style? So that's when I went and I got the IDW one and two, and then to get the rest of the material, I had to go back to the comic mix, which I found out there was not supposed to be a cooking book for the back half of the book. That it was
Yeah.
supposed to be all the John Sable.
I'm hoping that they'll get like they'll produce like a big old hardcover of that.
Oh,
Like
man.
on the Kickstarter, 'cause I know he just did his Maggie the Cat, and now
Yep,
we
I
have
got
Pilgrim coming out.
that.
And I'm hoping that they'll put out something, 'cause I think he has enough fan base to get a Kickstarter, like to get that minimum value.
Absolutely. I mean,
And
look at his kick. I don't know what the other Kickstarters does, but like you go to his and it seems like it's funded like, 3 weeks before their last day. I mean, it seems like he put something out and like, yeah, you're gonna get it funded sooner rather than later. I mean, I did his Maggie the Cat, and I got a couple of the placards that he sent and the book, and I don't have work right now, and you guys are, talking about the pilgrim, and I'm just like, I was crawling in my skin, like I shouldn't be doing this. So I was like, just get the credit card. It's only $30. You can do it. And that was like the only thing
But
I've bought since, everything's
yeah.
going on with COVID. But I did pledge the pilgrim. I can't miss out.
You were getting the itch. You
Oh my God,
had
big time. I mean, it's Mike Grell. So I mean, like, and it's like, ah.
I wish that they had planned at one time the Warlord, and I was like, those are the commissions that I've had him draw me are characters from Warlord because they have the most beautiful women I have ever seen in comics. I mean, it's just incredible. And that is a huge soap opera, in Middle Earth, and it'll draw you in, and it's a fantasy world type story, like kind of if you're into Conan or anything, that's the one hit that DC had. Like they didn't have their Conan or they tried a lot of stuff. They tried Beowulf, they tried Stalker. Nothing lasted, but Warlord went, 100 issues. That was the one book that made a run. And when you think Mike Grell, he had some big runs like the Green Arrow, the John Sable. He had a short run on the Legion of Superheroes, 'cause I'll always remember last time I talked to him was at a Comic Con here in Colorado Springs, and I was asking him about Cosmic Boys Bustiere. Like he had this,
Oh, yes.
you know what I'm talking about? It
Oh,
looks
yeah,
like
I
he's
saw some
wearing like a
pictures on that.
negligee.
That's some stuff I can't
And
unsee.
I was like, how does he? How does that physically like stay up? Like the how does it how does it how do, he doesn't have anything hanging over his shoulders. How does it
Oh,
stay up?
it's,
He
well,
doesn't
it was
have
cut.
any bosoms to hold him up. And he goes, "Well, what if they're magnetic filament and the
Oh.
magnets can keep it on?" I'm like, "Okay, that makes sense."
Yeah, there you go.
It was such a weird design.
Yeah, very weird. I saw the pictures recently. I think the guys must have been, you guys were talking about it on the saw the pictures and I was like, yeah, that's different.
What artists, I mean, you mentioned Mike Grell, but and you mentioned a ton of writers, but are there any type of artists that you would follow?
Artist Sean Phillips, really like Sean Phillips stuff. Don't know. Some of the I've always been more of a story guy. I think that's why I could belt out, a lot of
Yeah,
the my
I am more of a story guy too.
I
And
my
when you said Mike Grell, he's one of those guys that did both.
yeah,
So, yeah.
you know,
And
like,
John Byrne, same thing.
when I grew up, I had this dream of being a writer. I remember right when I was a little kid, I used to write stories and, I wanted to be like an author. So I'm like, definitely when, when they say artist story, I am definitely the writer story guy. And a lot of the mean with art, it all depends if it fits the story. That's kind of where I gauge, like, some artists I feel are good on certain books, like they could draw a really good horror book, like a Travel Foreman. I think it's great for like a horror style book. But if you put Travel Foreman, like say on a Spider-Man book, it'd be like that's not, that doesn't fit very
Yeah, it's
well.
like Kelly Jones. Kelly Jones works in the horror vibe. So you could put him on a Batman because it's got he could have a horror vibe and
Yep,
a you
right.
know, dead man
Right,
or
yes.
some of the stuff that he's doing, but you if you put him on like some light story, it's
Yes,
like that just doesn't fit.
and that's where I gauge a lot of the artists just by what story they're telling. Does the art work well for that story? There's
Yeah,
some
because I could see that I fit into that realm too. Like it, there's some the lighter hearted stories where they could get away with a lot more, like in art in terms of art for me,
Yep.
because it fits the story. It has to the heart has to fit the story. I think that I'm in the same boat as you.
Was it Ramos, right?
Yeah, well, Crimson.
Yes, well, Crimson, and that fits, that because, Crimson can be kind of like, almost like the Spider-Man kind of feel like to it a bit. But then if you put him like on something that was a real kind of serious book, like just the way he draws the characters, they're kind of like the big doughy eyes,
The
like
big feet.
and big feet, and like some of that stuff wouldn't really work, if you were trying to tell like a House of Secrets or you know what I mean? Like one of those like American Vampire or something like
Yeah,
that.
it
Like, I
wouldn't.
don't think that would fit well.
Yeah, but it would work on impulse because you have this kid that can
Yes.
run real
Yes.
fast.
Exactly.
And
Yeah,
he's very, yeah, he's pretty good.
speaking of the artists, like that's another one of my favorites is Raphael
Albuquerque.
Albuquerque, yes. Loved him, on the American Vampire, lots of times when I see his work. But he did Scout too, right? Or no, that's Guerrera.
Guerrera, yeah.
Yes. He's another one. So I guess I kind of like that, that sort of work, kind of like that gritty,
Well, Scalped is an amazing book. You can get really, really
Oh, yeah.
into that thing. That's addictive. That's one of those books that it's hard to like if you're reading it in trade, it's hard to like stop. You like need to go on and on and on until you finish.
It's not too bad. It's a five volumes.
Yeah.
I read it. Yeah, like you said, I went right through the whole thing. I couldn't put it down. It was like one book right to the next one. I got to the second one. I'm like, okay, I'm ordering all five of these. Again,
Yeah.
all five deluxe editions because it's,
So are there when you get collected editions and you're bookshelfing these, you don't have to worry about long boxes and bags and boards, but you do have to worry about shelf space. So you want to talk a little bit about that, like what you decide to keep and maybe what you decide to maybe not shelf?
So what I do is, so I can shelf everything, is I just keep having custom bookcases built. My wife thinks I'm absolutely crazy and should stop. But so I have all my bookcases. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 bookcases, and they're all custom built by the same guy. So he uses the same wood, same stain. He knows what I'm doing, and they all fit perfectly along the walls because, we do all the dimensions and everything. And so far, so I started with 2, and then I got 2 more, 4, and then I got 4 more the last time, and I still have a little bit of room, and I actually have plans. I can probably fit 4 more down here, and I'll have like little aisles, so it'll be just like a library or a bookstore. When I'm after that, I'm not sure, what my next step is from that. I haven't got there yet, but.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful display the way you have it out there. I noticed that you show some of them on the bindings, as which is the normal display, but you have like Avengers popping out, like the first Spider-Man and Amazing Fantasy, and then the first Punisher. It does that mean that you're using that space, that whole entire space, to show the front cover of that, or is there are there books in back of that?
No, there's no books in back. We're just using the
Okay.
space. So yeah, so I have space. Like I said, I got four more bookshelves built. Was it last Christmas? So I'm slowly, and they're filling up, and I still have space. Like because obviously I can turn them all. I just do that for like display, just to make it look nice down here for myself, I guess. But
Yeah.
I saw that idea on one of the Omni collector groups, and I was like, oh, that's really cool, because you always just see the spines, and like I want to enjoy the covers. Some of these books are beautiful, so I kind of I go through, and when I'm adding books on, I'll rotate different ones to kind of show off and whatnot.
Yeah. And that's what I think DC did wrong though, like with some of their their bindings, is they changed the sides. And but logically it sort of made sense, because that is the side you see, but you don't want to like stack two of them together and have them look completely different.
Yeah, that's DC
You
bindings.
don't usually want to see the numbers like bouncing on different heights. You don't want to
Yeah.
see like they did that. What did they do that with? Swamp Thing, and they did it with House of Mystery, I think they did it with.
I'm looking at the House of Mystery right now. Yes, the first volume is the Bronze Age, the classic like bronze binding.
Yeah.
And then the second House of Mystery, volume 2, is a better looking book. But it's not, they change it up.
Yeah. You know what they could do to fix that? I mean, it's a stupid idea, but maybe it would have the collector say, I'm okay with that, is deliver it with two book, what do they call it? The book,
Variant,
you
like
know,
the variant.
those, no, the, you know how they're wrapped, they have a wrapping around it, the paper wrapping.
Yep.
What do they call
The
that?
dust jacket.
Yeah, the dust jacket.
Yep.
If they delivered it with two different dust
There.
jackets.
Yeah. There. Yeah. That's. Yeah. That's a pretty. Yeah.
Because that might be an easy way to
Oh
satisfy,
yeah.
you
Yeah. And how much
know.
the dust jacket, right? I mean,
Yeah.
those. That's. Yeah. No, that's a good idea. I never thought
Yeah.
of that. But I don't think I mean, don't get me wrong. I love DC, but their collected editions department. Sometimes I don't. They seem like they're all over the place, and.
I think they're all over the place for a reason. I think they got acquired by AT&T, and they're trying to keep the peanut counters at bay, and they're trying to ask. It's like if you have a boss that's saying, "Well, why isn't this selling this? Well, what
Right.
can you do to change it?" Well, you're going to try to come up with something that will try to fix it. But in trying to fix it, you've just harmed some of the people that were backing it in the hopes to get somebody that hadn't picked it up before. It's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't situations. It's
Right.
a tough thing. And Marvel, I think I think they have enough money and backing to say, hey, if I solicit it, it's gonna come out, even if I'm gonna lose money. Like
Yeah,
they know
Marvel.
they're gonna do it. They're like a machine.
I don't even know I don't know if they're losing money, but I mean, Marvel just knocks it out of the park with their collected editions, their Omnis, and stuff. I mean, they're reprinting Omnis that are going out of stock on the same day. We mentioned earlier the Uncanny X-Force with Deadpool. So that Omni was out of print since I got back into collecting. I always wanted it, and it was going for like $200, $300. Like, no, I am not paying that. And they finally reprinted it about, well, I think a month ago, and it
Yeah.
was sold out in 3 hours on in stock trades. Like, the new releases come out at 3 o'clock. I went to go get it at 5, and I did not get a copy of it. It was already gone.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of them, and but they've been coming out with a lot of them. I think they redid Silver Surfer. They did they're starting to do all the Uncannies, like Volume 1, Volume 2, Volume 3. I have all the originals
Of
because
the
I of the Omnibus.
X-Men stuff?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I got all that. They're coming out, actually, Volume 4 is the new one they're coming out with.
Yeah, I saw it in the latest previews and I'm like, wow, they're really pumping out the second editions on some of these. But it's probably a good thing to do because the demand, yes, you have the collectors that say I want a first edition, but I think a bigger portion is I want to read the whole story. Yeah.
Definitely. Especially with the Omni collectors, it's, because, there's a groups, I'm in a couple different groups, and it's like 4,000 to 5,000, and they collect a lot Omnis. And like, it's not even like the first and second, printing, that doesn't really matter. It's more about having the material. They can give us the third printing, and people are going to be like, they just want the material, in the book. I think a lot of, like I mentioned earlier, underlining, that completist, like, I just want every issue of this run because I just, love these characters so much.
Have you ever had any books bound yourself?
Yes, I had the American Vampire bound, and
Oh.
they came out with the
But
Omni.
at that time you didn't know.
That time I didn't know, and I haven't bound any other ones, but I did do the American Vampire. I just wanted to
Were you
go through the
happy with the way
process.
it came out?
Huh?
Were you happy with the way it came out?
Yeah, I was happy the way it came out, and the only mistake in it was my personal mistake, 'cause I had not done it before. It was just like a learning experience. Like the cover, the dust jacket, like, they all came out great. And it's about, I think, 3 volumes per book.
Yeah.
And I didn't put it, I just kind of was like, okay, here, take these 3 volumes and put it in. And they did. But what I wasn't thinking about is, so all the material in the back comes at the end of each collected, instead of like all at the end of the back or at the back of the book. So like, you read like 6 issues, then you got like all the extra stuff, and then you go into like issue number 7. It's just not properly put into the book, and that's on me, because they ask you, how you want
Yeah. But
stuff put in.
that could be a lesson learned for
Oh
anybody
yeah.
that listens here to maybe put better planning into it if you're going to invest in binding something
Yep,
like that.
because then I got it. It looks great. I mean, everything that the binders did, it was 100%. That was on me. I just basically threw them the books and said, here, put this into a binding, and they put it in. Okay, volume one, page one through whatever, and then volume two, page one through whatever. Instead of, you would want to put your issues in and then have all your extras
The
at the end.
back matter at the end. Yeah.
Yes, instead I
And that's
got.
kind of like what Marvel does with their omnis. A lot of them you'll read the story like continuously, and then there's some back matter like Muhatmu pages or whatever they put in the back of it. The letters pages.
I know people out there can't see it, but so these are the ones I had bound. That's
Oh
my dust.
yeah, they look nice. They look very professional. Yeah, I like it.
And then actually, so you take the dust jacket off. So this is what it looks like underneath the dust jacket.
Oh wow, that's impressive. That is very impressive.
Yes, like I said, I mean, they knocked it out of the park. The error, the thing I'm displeased with is myself and how I, had it put
Because
in
you
there.
have a interruption, right? You're like reading
Yes.
and then you have an interruption and then you're reading and
Yes.
you have an interruption.
You know, at the end of, the volume, and like you said, all the back matters should be at the back of the book, and like mine's, at the end of each collected edition that came out in the trade paperback. Because that's what I used to have these bound. I took the trade paperbacks that I had, like volumes 1 through 6, and I had the first one's volume 1 through 3, and the second one is 4 through 6.
Yeah. So this shelf that I'm looking at in the back, is that 4 rows or 5? Is that fi tall?
The
Yeah.
Marvel, that one is 4.
4. And then the one
Six.
on the left is 6.
Six. Yep.
Okay. But the one on the right is a much wider unit, right? I mean, the one on the middle is wider, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
That one looks extremely long.
Yeah. See, then you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's really cool.
Just a little bit. And that's though, so that one I had, those were my first two bookcases. And what I found out was my Omnis didn't fit in there. So that's why the big ones are all for the trade paperbacks. And then I went to what you see behind me. I had
Yeah.
it. Okay, I'm collecting Omnis and I need these things to be able to fit in here. And that's why they're a little bit smaller because of the support. Because I had an old bookcase that was built in the wall when we bought the house. And when I started collecting the trade paperbacks, the shelf bowed, and one day it just all went. So when I was having him build it, I got away from like the longer ones so we could have like almost cubes, so there was more support, because those books are heavy and you put like 10 omnibus on one shelf, and that's a lot of weight,
Yeah, I can
with
see why you have the design on the omnibus shelf the way you do. Like that's a that looks really sturdy, and there's not the length isn't as big. In other words, it's like cubes. Like here's a
Yes.
small cube or a smaller
Yes.
cube for support, because those are really
Right.
heavy books. I
And that's
can't
two.
carry more than like five at a
Right, yeah.
time. You know, up a
It's.
flight of stairs, they're heavy.
Right. And that's actually two cases behind me. So they're two separate ones that just push together to make
They
it
look. It
looks like
looks.
a.
It looks like one unit, though.
Yes. Yeah. But it's, yeah,
Yeah.
it's two different ones.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like your display quite a bit. What I'm going to ask you to do, though, is pick like 4 photos so I can. I don't know if you saw what I did with the last episode, but I had Eric send me 4 photos, and you can send 4 photos of whatever you like. You know, just to show some of your collection, if you would. So
Yeah,
I
awesome.
attach those to the website and then also on the Twitter feed, and it'll show up.
I will. I will send. Try to get my whole collection in 4 photos. I think I can do it.
Yeah, you can. You just whatever's more important to you. You know,
Yep.
like yeah, that's what.
Yes.
And I don't know if we'll meet of HeroesCon because of what the circumstances are, but hopefully we will meet in person at some point.
Yes, I hope. I mean, that's my first Comic Con, right? I mean, that's kind of a gun. I'm never going to get to one.
One thing is you were going to the best, and I will say that from I've been to San Diego, I've been to big cons, and the one unique thing about Heroes is it's all comics. Like it there's just this there's no celebrities, there's no there are a lot of vendors, but it's usually comic themed. But
Right.
it is the best for me. Like I fly out there every year from Colorado, and I make it a point to get there, and it's just an amazing convention.
That's what I heard. I take me to any convention at this, right? I've never been, so they brought with us. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Andy said we should go to this one. I think you're really gonna like it. And so I mean, it's hopefully this gets cleared up. I mean, my plane ticket's bought,
Yeah.
my weekend pass is bought. All I'm waiting for is, was it June 20th,
Yeah.
19th?
We'll
Then
see. Hopefully,
yeah,
we will see you there. Yeah.
I hope
Do you
so.
have any closing statements you want to make?
No, I don't
Or
think so.
anything else you want to mention, Travis?
No, I'm just thank you very much for having me. You know, I love talking comics. Like I said, being up here in Vermont and, you know, being, you know, 45-year-old male, there's not a lot of people to talk about. We did
Yeah.
have a comic shop. Unfortunately, it went under 3, 4 years ago. And, you know, so I got you guys on the Slack channel. So I just enjoy talking comics as, you know, people have the same passion that I do. So it's been
Yeah.
really.
Well, you're not in this. You're not in a different boat than I am. I don't have any comic friends in where I live. They're all on the East Coast, and that's one of the reasons I go to Heroes.
There.
All my podcasting buddies and friends are out east. I don't have too many friends out west. They're almost all out east.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's yeah, this has been great. I love talking about my collection, you know, like I point all the books, I come down and I enjoy it. And when I have people come over the house, like who aren't even comic book people, but you know, my wife's always like, take them, you know, she's not into comics, but I think she appreciates, you know, what I've done down here. She's like, show them you're downstairs. Show me. And people are like, oh, what are
Yeah.
you down here?
It's
And they
'cause it's
come down there.
impressive. It's really impressive. It's like
Yeah.
a library.
Yes. People come down here and they're like, I don't really like comics, but I can definitely appreciate this. And, you know, they'll just stare at it for like, wow, this is, you know, amazing.
Yeah, that's a
I
lot of
mean, I've seen
material.
people like work on our furnace, you know, guys that come over work and they peek around the corner like, wow, look at this.
Yeah, I just had a new furnace put in, and the two guys were in my basement, and one of the guys said, I collect comics, but I have like five long boxes. He says, I've never seen a collection like this in my life, he said.
Yeah. Well, they can, you know, the people appreciate it. I like it.
Yeah.
I wish I could have everybody come over and, you know, just go through my stuff with me sometime.
Yeah. I had to extend my bookshelves over into a storage locker. So
Oh, man.
some of my Epic collections, like I have if you look on where you have your Epic collections, I have two units like that in a storage unit just of Epic collections.
Wow. Yeah, I think I've seen some photos of your stuff and
It's like I really like them, but I'm gonna have to get another bookshelf just for Epics because they are coming out like 4 a month on
Oh
average.
yeah.
Yeah.
That's I mean Marvel they're not giving up you know their lines like with the Marvel Masterworks. I mean they're still printing those things. You know, if
Yeah.
you got on board the Masterworks, don't have no fear. You know, we're still gonna print Masterworks, you know, unlike the DC archives, which are just gone and probably never gonna see them
Right.
again.
The only
It's Marvel.
masterwork I have is the Defenders, but they have a new one solicited. I think it's
Yes, I
volume
saw that.
7 of Defenders.
I actually jumped on some of Spider-Woman, Ghost Rider, Spectacular Spider-Man, the volume. The Masterworks are great.
They're
But the problem with the
expensive,
Masterworks,
though. Oof.
well, that and the problem with that is you can't go back. Like, if you miss the boat on some of them, like some of the volume ones, they still have in print, but there's always like some that are out of print and just going for ridiculous prices. Like, you can't go back, like, oh, I want to collect Amazing Spider-Man,
Yeah.
Marvel Master.
Well,
You might be able to get volumes 1 and 2, but like volumes 6 and 7 is completely out of print and going for like $300 for a $75 book.
that's one thing that they will collected editions I have found is they hold a lot of value when they go out of print.
They
And
hold a lot
they're
of value.
expensive. Woo!
Yep. I
I
mean,
mean,
that Tomb
we're
of Dragons.
talking you spent let's just say you spend $100 or if you get it discounted at in stock trades and you get it for like $65 or whatever, it could be like 5 years, but that might be 3 times the value of the retail cost.
Absolutely. I mean, the Tomb of Dracula. So I got the Omnis Volume 1, 2, and 3, and
Yeah.
the first volume was going for like $500 to $600, and then they reprinted it,
Yeah.
so then the price drops off. But then Volume 2 hasn't been reprinted, so now Volume 2 is going for like $500 or $600.
Yeah. It's
And
incredible. I think
if I
that's what
wanted.
got me to the attention of collected editions, to tell you the truth. That and plus it's nice to have, all the material in one in one place.
I mean, I
Yeah.
know some of the Omni collectors. I mean, they almost work it as like a job. They get it. They know what's out of print. They sell it, and then they wait. And if there's a reprint, great. It's almost like they're just trying to pick stuff up and move it. And you can definitely, if you ever got in a tight pinch, there's a lot of people out there that buy stuff,
Yeah.
with the Omnis.
Yep. So, do you have any contact information you want to release, or are you pretty much exclusive to the Slack channel on the collected
I'm
comments?
exclusive to the Slack channel. You want to talk to me, you got to come to the Slack channel.
Yeah, and anybody can join. It's the collected comics library Slack channel. And I don't remember the bit.ly name because they
I
give
don't.
it, but if you do, use a podcatcher and you search for Collected Comics Library. Chris and Andy always give the information for their site. That's where we hang out to talk about collected editions and just a lot of different stuff,
Great
even
group.
movies and TV.
Yeah, everything. Sports. When
Yeah,
sports is
sports and everything.
everything. That's
Well,
it's an amazing group. I can't say enough. I mean, like you in Colorado, me in Vermont, like having that community, I mean, it's great. I can ask a question and somebody will give me a response and just
yeah, you
share.
and somebody just asked you a question, and you probably just pulled your book off the shelf. They asked about JSA, and you were like, "Well, this is what it includes,"
Oh
because
yeah, one of the
he
people
wanted
in
to know,
reading order.
yeah, the reading
The
order,
reading order.
yeah,
Yeah, if you, I get you.
because
That's
sometimes
what
it,
that's the next bit of unity.
yeah, I guess if somebody's reading digitally, they might not know the reading order, and sometimes the app
Right.
doesn't tell you. You have to jump around sometimes from
And
title
like
to
that, yeah, the
title.
one he was looking for the JSA, and like I didn't even realize, that it was bouncing back and forth. It was like this was this, then you go to this issue, and then you
Yeah.
go to that issue. Oh wow,
Hawkman, go
that's
to this, go to this.
yep,
Yep,
exactly.
it has all the tie-ins in there and all that stuff. Yep.
Yep,
I love
that's
those
another good
volumes.
thing.
Those guys are beasts. Those
The JSA.
JSA, yeah, those volumes are golly. They're so thick. Doom Patrol is another beast. The Morrison Doom Patrol. Holy mackerel,
Yep.
is that big.
I think the biggest one that I have is the Final Crisis anniversary omnibus. Thing is massive. Like the Jack Kirby is a big one. Hold on one
Yeah.
second. So this is the Final Crisis.
Oh, wow.
Let me
That
maybe give you
is
a little
that.
be a comparison to mine.
Wow.
And this American Vampire is about 18 issues, so if
What
that
is
tells you
the
the size.
contents of that Final Crisis? Does it have the 6 issue mini plus the or 7 issues plus the all the tie-ins like Revelations and.
It's got there's like 10 Batman issues, Birds of Prey, DC Universe, Last Testament, The Final Crisis 1 through 7, Requiem, Revelations, yep, Rogue's Revenge, Secret Files, Superman Beyond. They got about a couple issues of The Flash, Justice League of America, Superman, Batman, Teen Titans, Terror Titans 1 through 6.
Wow,
This is
that is a
this is
beast. Let
and
me
that's
look at
another good thing.
the side of it again. I'm just trying
I
to see if it's bigger than my Doom Patrol. It's close. I'd like to stack them together and see. I didn't get that one, but it looks really interesting.
don't have the that's one of the few I don't have
Have
is
you read that yet?
this one. No,
Oh, you're gonna enjoy
not.
that one.
I've read, like I got some of the Crisis stuff, but I've never read it with all the extras. That's why
Yeah.
another reason why I like Omnis, because it's all set up for me, I
Yeah.
imagine, in proper reading order, and I'm gonna get it all right here.
When you
Like,
do read that, can you let me know if I'm really curious, like if Revelations is all sequential or if it was in the printed order. You know what I mean? Like
I
Revelations was
think
like
you.
6 issues. I wonder if they put all. Because it would be weird,
No.
because that's the Spectre Renee Montoya story. And,
I, no. So it should be in the correct order. I mean, DC can be a little, you know, with their collected editions, but like even with the JSA stuff.
As they came
stuff,
out, though, so you'd like read it like, here's this issue, and then it would switch over to like Final Crisis number 4 or...
Yes. Oh, okay. That's the way, you know, and some of the other ones that I've read, that, yes, that's how they do it. And the way you should read it, read the book, is how it comes in. Which is nice, you know, because then you don't have to, like, you know, that's how I helped on the Slack channel. He was wondering about the JSA and there's Justice America. And in the book, it goes back and forth between the two. So you're reading the story the way they want you to read the story.
Yeah. That one's a little different, though, because that one, like, when it crosses over with Hawkman, you have to read it in that order, or you have to read it. This one, like, you can those minis, like Requiem and all those, does that one have Dance in it or whatever that the Japanese group is? I can't remember what it's called.
Don't see it.
There was it had Final Crisis Inc. too, or something like that, with Tattoo Man.
No, it doesn't. I don't think that's. I don't see it in this one.
Maybe I'm thinking of a different event. Let me see. It's. Oh, does it have the Aftermath? It does, or does it not?
It does not.
Okay, so it's missing Final Crisis Aftermath Dance, Final Crisis Aftermath Escape, Final Crisis Aftermath Inc., and Final Crisis Aftermath Run. Those are real obscure stuff. One of them is like the new Tattooed Man. Dance is the Japanese group. Escape is Nemesis. I don't know if you remember Nemesis from like Suicide Squad, but he's in there. And then Run is, I can't remember. It's some really obscure character that's in there. It's the Human Flame. I guess that would have killed him, though, because that would have been like 24 more issues, and that thing wouldn't have held. Yeah.
This is about as big as you want, just for binding purposes. Like, I mean, when I open this, I mean, I don't know. Like, you have to relax the spine. There's a whole thing that before you can even start to read this, because when they're this big, I mean, you're gonna rip some pages. It's just a lot of weight to put on.
Definitely want to read on a table or something flat, I think.
I wouldn't even – I would probably have to, you know, almost like page one by one and kind of have the – like this. You know, so I'm reading it like this and then just opening it up.
Yeah.
You don't want to stretch that spine too much right off.
Kirby, I almost double dipped because I have all of the originals. The one, you know, like the Fourth World stuff that he did. He did like Commandy, all those volumes, and then they did Mr. Miracle and the New Gods and all kinds of stuff. And I had all those, so I had all the material. And then he had done like it that contains like the weird magazine stuff that he did, like Spirit World and all the other stuff. Right. And I had that, but they're in a weird format. In other words, those are like big, they're bigger than the regular size. And I was like, man, I kind of would like to have it all in one volume.
Right, yeah.
So, I've been thinking about double dipping on that one before it gets too expensive.
Yeah, that's another big one. That's probably my second biggest Omni.
Yeah.
Jack Kirby, Fourth World. And the Infinite Crisis is a big one, too. Yeah, there's some. Right. DC really tries to get a lot of the material into one book, which people don't like. You know, a lot of people, it's just like, you know, people talk about the Omnis now being clunky kind of read. I mean, then you make something like this. Like, that's, you know, even for me, it's like, wow, this is big.
Yeah. I didn't know that one existed with all the extras, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I think this came out last year.
Yeah.
10th anniversary, so yeah.
Good stuff. Well, I want to thank you for joining me, Travis. I really appreciate it. We'll have to talk again soon, and hope to see you at Heroes if it all works out.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike, for having me on.
All right. You take it easy, and be safe.
You too, Mike.
Take care. Bye. Bye.